talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. This is the Len Vidopic Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Vidopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. And you are a lively lot on a Sunday morning, now Sunday afternoon in the UK. Wherever you are, you're most welcome to join us. And do join the chat at tntradio.live. I didn't mention it till now because I had nothing to say, but you've been going on about football on my site. You're welcome to do it, but I'm just not reading it out because I learned long ago, if you side with one team, you lose all the support from the others. I happen to support Leicester City, if anyone cares, because they were a kind of middle-ranking team that kept getting promoted and demoted. But then they got quite popular, and then that became more controversial. So I shall leave the football discussion for you. I'll stick to the politics. Very interesting guest just now, Stephen Morris from the Workers of England Union. He reminded me of the Quiet Man, if you've seen the film, somebody who speaks logically and calmly, but with an iron fist in a velvet glove. Wonder what you think. Can a union be at its most effective if it's formally affiliated with a political party? Or is it better if it can roam freely between parties and therefore represent individuals rather than an individual political creed? Wonder what you think. Do put it into tntradio.live chat. Coming up in this hour, we have a regular friend of today's News Talk, TNT. At a very timely moment, it'll be Harry Wilkinson in a few minutes from Net Zero Watch. A lot has been happening in the climate debate in the United Kingdom, where there seems to be a wholesale retreat from the original, we're all going to die, we've all got to give up modern living mantra, particularly during this week in the UK. The party of government, for now at least, the Conservatives, said that they wanted to revert to fossil fuel for the grid. Now, when I say revert, they never really left it. So I want to ask Harry how he feels about the current political situation in terms of trying to make sense of the continuing shrill cries from the Greens that we're all going to destroy this climate of ours. Why hasn't there been more coverage of a seminal film, which was released on premiere in Leicester Square in London this week, called Climate the Movie, and what he predicts will happen in the run-up to the general election. But before that, let me mention a related story. If you've been watching the news, certainly in Europe and perhaps in the world, I don't know how much of this permeates, for example, Australian broadcasting, there's a huge lava fissure in Iceland. That means that lava is spewing out of the ground and threatening to absorb human habitation. In other words, torch the houses. The way it's presented in the UK, it's almost as if it's an evil thing, as if we have to stop the lava. Now, let's think about that. My six-year-old plays something called Minecraft. I don't know much about it, but it seems to be an online video game which has infinite possibilities. And sometimes the ground turns into lava. And she knows she can't walk on that. She's six. She knows she can't walk on it. Nor does she really think she can stop it. So if my six-year-old knows in a fictional game that she can't stop the lava, well, I suppose because it's fictional, you could. Why do humans not realize that lava is stronger than people? And here's the fundamental point. If you build a house on an island which has been built out of, you guessed it, lava, why be surprised when there's more of it? Iceland is on a geological fault line between two tectonic plates. Those are the great, big, massive bits of rock that slowly float around on the ocean of lava beneath and cause earthquakes and volcanoes and mountains. So Iceland is doing its thing. And yet, this first point, it's presented as if we might be able to stop it. If you live by the sword, or if you live on top of lava, you might also have to leave your house because of the lava. And then there's a second point, the environmental one. How much carbon dioxide is being spewed out by these volcanoes? This morning, as always, I was researching for my show and for my guests. I couldn't find the figure. because they don't really want you to know how much natural carbon dioxide is coming out of the ground as part of the lava outflow. Maybe it's not very much, but I suspect it is. All this goes to show that when nature does what nature does and we can't do anything about it, we turn a blind eye. When the oceans spit out trillions of tons of carbon dioxide because they get warmer naturally, no one wants to talk about it. When the trees go greener because there's a bit more fertilizing friendly CO2 in the air, no one wants to talk about it. When it comes down to it, we have a double pincer movement now against the climate emergency scam. One is the fact that people are beginning to get quite unhappy about the fact that their lifestyle is going to be impoverished in those countries with governments dumb enough to dumb down our economies in the vain hope that they can affect climate, wag the dog of nature by cutting our CO2 emissions. And the other thing that's happening is nature, in its ironic mischievousness, has created this massive, big, long fissure in Iceland. And I think it's telling us, keep taking the tablets, guys, but you can cure the headache. You can't cure the lava. And in that sense, I'm thanking the tectonic plates for reminding us how puny, how ineffective we are, how we will not stop the tectonic plates from drifting around as they have done for billions of years in the past. Thank goodness that nature has a way of drawing the international attention of the cameras just to tell us who's boss. Well, on that basis, you might want to say something, especially if you're a volcanic scientist, a volcanist, as they're called, which, as I said before, doesn't mean you're a Star Trek extra. And maybe you can correct me. Maybe you have a figure for how much CO2 is being spewed out per hour in Iceland. But wherever you stand on it, let's celebrate the fact that volcanoes will be here long after we have gone. Somebody who's also here now, and I'm very delighted to introduce him in a moment, is Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch. All of that with me, Lemba Topic, in what should be an entertaining and interesting hour about the true science of climate change and the mysterious silence of the media about a seminal film that was premiered right in central London this week. All of that on TNT with me, Lemba Topic.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Joining me now is a one-man volcano of knowledge and wisdom about the environment. It's Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch. Harry, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining me.
Hello, Lambert. My pleasure. Great to be here.
How have you been since we last saw you? Have you been busy?
Well, it's been a very busy week. We've had some interesting developments on the British political front. We've had the announcement of these new gas power stations, I think, and an acknowledgement that wind and solar are just not going to be able to power the grid of the future. They're still going to need to be relying on gas power. So it's not surprising for us because we knew this before, but it's good to see that the political acknowledgement is starting to happen that we still rely fundamentally on fossil fuels, and however much you wish an alternative into existence, it's just not going to happen at the moment. And then we also saw the scrapping, or at least the delaying for a year, of the gas boiler tax that was due to hit British consumers from April. This was going to set a 6% minimum target for heat pumps as a proportion of boiler sales from this year. And, you know, there was a lot of concern that that would increase boiler prices. The boiler companies were already putting up prices for their gas boilers by £120. And that's just a 6% target. You know, think about how huge the extra cost burden would be as you push up to try and hit that 600,000 heat pump target by 2028. We're looking at potentially over £1,000 extra that you would need to be paying for your gas boiler. So it's good that this has been kicked into the long grass for the time being, but hopefully we can scrap this absurd idea once and for all. And of course, we had this great film by Martin Durkin this week, where I was also very privileged to be there for the premiere. And, you know, what was striking to me about that was just how, you know, it had all these amazing graphs, all this interesting knowledge about all the different factors that affect the climate and the huge changes that we've seen in the past that have clearly had nothing to do with human influence. And I think if people were aware of a lot of these facts about the Earth's past climate, it would actually allow them to see the current hysteria about climate change catastrophe in a little bit of context.
Net Zero Watch has in the past been marginalized by the media and also by politicians. And under its former incarnation, Global Warming Policy Foundation, it's been dismissed as cranky. And yet many of the things that Net Zero Watch, which I tend to regard as my scientific library of information on these subjects, many of the things that Net Zero Watch was predicting or warning about have come to pass. You, I believe, said that it would be impossible to have a zero carbon dioxide grid. You also pointed out that it's pointless. It's a ridiculous thing to do. And now we've seen the Conservatives this week abandon it. We covered this briefly in TNT, but I really wanted to devote an hour to it because it seems to me an absolutely seminal moment in the debate. The question for me, therefore, is, am I right in assuming if the Conservatives say we're not going to go for wind and solar, then the Labour Party are very likely to say after they get elected, well, because the Conservatives abandon it, we can't restart it. So that would essentially mean that they've junked the zero carbon dioxide grid agenda promise.
Well, I think that there's a little bit sort of further to go yet before we see that wholesale recognition that net zero is a fantastical agenda, that it will punish ordinary people an enormous amount. We're seeing the first signs that politicians are beginning to realize how infeasible it is. However, you know, we still have the Labour Party promising to deliver a zero carbon grid by 2030, you know, in just 6 years' time. So that remains their policy. And that surely can't be sustained for much longer. No one's serious from whatever side they are, whether they're sort of radical Greens. No one really thinks that's going to be delivered. You know, this gas power station issue is welcome, but what the government is still proposing is just to have those gas power stations ready as backup. So they'll be used less and less as the generation from wind and solar increases. However, they'll still be vital because there are still long periods where there just isn't any wind or sun to rely upon. So we'll be having a parallel grid. We'll be having a fossil fuel grid, which will still have to, you know, provide the vast majority of our power capacity. And then we'll have a parallel system of wind and solar, which will actually be way, way more than the power capacity we actually need. It will be, you know, perhaps three times what we need, because you look, even offshore wind, which has the best capacity factor, is still only about 40%. You know, onshore wind is closer to 30, maybe less than 30%. So this stuff is used less than half the time, significantly.
But when you say 40 and 30%, you mean if you have a 2 megawatt rated, say 3 megawatt rated wind turbine, you'll just get a third of that roughly. You get 1 megawatt on average. I actually thought it was near more like a quarter.
Well, yeah, you have sort of megawatt hours looking at the generation over a period of time. And so that 40% is a percentage of the theoretical maximum that technology could achieve if it was running all the time.
So in other words, I don't want to confuse people with this. So just in lay terms, if I have 10 megawatts of wind turbines, maximum capacity, probably if it's running at 30%, I'll get 3 megawatts on average. That's what you mean.
Yeah, at any point in time, that's right.
Yeah. Whereas with a gas-fired power station, if it's rated at 10 megawatts and you put it on full power, you get 10 megawatts, don't you?
That's right, that's right. And, you know, we see small interruptions for various maintenance tasks, but they're only very, very small. And so it's a vastly more reliable technology, and it is, you know, the price-setting technology in the market, because it is able to switch on and off So even more so than even coal and nuclear, which take longer to ramp up and actually get going, the one thing that gas has above all the other technologies is its ability just to switch on almost at the flick of a button and give you exactly the power capacity that you need for that time.
I do have issues with using gas for that, but we'll come back to that a little bit later on the show. We have to go to a break in a minute, Harry. I recognize I keep talking over you, but to summarize, you're going to summarize and then we'll go to a break and then come back. So go ahead, Harry.
Well, I think to summarize, it's that, you know, this dual system where we build all this extra capacity is going to be hugely more expensive than if we just built a system that the gas power stations, which are significantly cheaper than wind and solar, could operate for more of the time. And of course, we need to see that investment in nuclear as well. You know, France has already done the decarbonisation of its power sector by and large, because it went for nuclear much before anyone else. And there's promising science in small modular nuclear technology. So there are low carbon ways to do this as well. But, you know, we've got to have a cost focused approach. We've got to see politicians prioritise the cost of electricity, because that's what ordinary people need, is cheap electricity. You know, people are choosing between heating and eating in this last energy crisis that we've had since the Ukraine war here in the UK. It's been desperate times and people need cheap electricity. And that will then feed through to a better economy for everyone. It will feed through to better industrial performance. And it will actually mean that you can decarbonize more technologies if you have cheap electricity. So, you know, that by focusing on renewables instead of everything else, you know, they're defeating their own objectives while lumbering the public with huge costs that are unsustainable.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that, well, I'm convinced we don't need to decarbonize or reduce carbon dioxide, to be precise. Carbon's a solid, but they reduce carbon dioxide emissions at all. But we can come back to that in a minute. After the break, I want to talk with you about the film which came out. I touched on it during the week, but we can go a little bit deeper today. And I'm going to ask you what the film's about and why it's had almost no coverage in the old mainstream media. You're listening to the Len Vitopek Show. I'm with Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch. This is TNT. We'll see you in a minute.
TNT's Chris Smith.
I can tell you that Donald Trump is projected to win primaries in the states of Texas, Minnesota, Colorado, Virginia, Maine, Massachusetts, Arkansas, Alabama, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And in a little bit of a turn up, the northeastern state of Vermont looks to have gone to his final rival, the former United Nations ambassador, Nikki Haley. Now, Nikki Haley's team has said that she won't be speaking tonight. That has been construed by many of the reporters in that location as she's about to exit the race in the next 24 hours.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
This is generally the view of people. Oh, we don't know much about Assange. Well, you should know, because whether you know it or not, he is fighting for you.
For your courage and leadership and tenacity in journalism and publishing.
Since 2010, Assange has been held in progressively narrower, darker, colder, and crueler spaces.
He has been detained since the 7th of December 2010 in one form or another.
And we are now here after years of imprisonment.
WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist.
A traitor, a treasonous.
He has to answer for what he has done.
Assange faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes.
The U.S. government narrative about Julian is a complete fraud. It is a complete fraud from A to Z.
Julian took on the most powerful countries in the world, basically all of them.
We now have confirmed that there were plans to kidnap Julian here in the center of London, or even assassinate him.
No one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice. But the great truth teller
sits behind bars.
If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
Julian Assange is a hero.
What if everything we thought we knew about somebody was a lie? Would we be willing to go on a new journey of understanding? This is a story of deception, lies, bravery, and a man who risked everything to bring the truth to light.
Mr. Assange shows all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time.
He looked at me intensely and said, "I hate to say this." He then hesitated, visibly troubled and searching for words. And then he finally said, "Please, save my life."
May future generations have the ability to speak without restraint. May our children and their children know truth and have access to information that leads to justice. Wherever Julian goes, free speech goes with him.
If there is a bird that is about to take flight, stretch her wings and rule the skies, may it be a peace dove and no longer a bald eagle.
If you think Assange is a traitor, he's a rapist, he's a narcissist, he's a hacker, I don't blame you, because you have been deceived. And if you think you've not been deceived, that's normal, because otherwise it wouldn't be deception.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking! Turn it up!
TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Podopic Show here on Today's News Talk. We're halfway through now. Time goes very quickly. I'm still with Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch, a scientifically based community which prompts and sponsors scientific articles about the question of climate. A few comments before we go back to Harry. Madrid says zero carbon dioxide means zero life on Earth. Indeed, we'll come back to that, Madrid, because I saw a film and Harry's organization was represented in a film that was premiered in Leicester Square in central London about that very point. Sunday Girl asked me to ask Harry about CO2 and greenhouse gases. We will come to that in a minute. And Seb says, went to Iceland in the winter and surprisingly little ice. Greenland is the actual location at the North Pole. They deceive us. Even in the name, they imply Greenland. I always think that they probably called it Greenland because it was meant to be a bit of public relations for getting people to go to Greenland. But let's remember, Greenland was not nearly as icy as that in the past. We found graves where ice now is. So obviously it was a lot warmer in the past, but we'll talk about that in a minute as well. A couple more. Madrid adds, "Lembit, your guest this weekend have raised my blood pressure, so I'll be making a claim against TNT for affecting my health." Well, I'm glad it's raised your blood pressure, Madrid. Go out and do something about it. I do know you're pretty active, actually. Sunday Girl, hello, by the way, Sunday Girl. I want to see him squirm. CO2 and greenhouses, please. I'm not sure Harry's on the other side on this one, but I'll ask him on that. And Mr. Moose goes, "Blimey, Maz on a Sunday." It's not complicated, Maz, Mr. Moose. Any reasonable school person should be able to understand that. Skippy is saying, "Paying money to freeze. I'll wait for until they down the grid and turn the gas off to find out what it's really like." Okay, let's go back to you. There's lots more commentary there. I can't keep up with all of it, so apologies. I'm only taking a snapshot there. Harry, big question. Where do you stand on CO2? Is carbon dioxide our friend or foe?
Absolutely. I mean, clearly CO2 has many benefits. It's the reason we have life on Earth. All the plants rely on CO2 for photosynthesis. And as the concentration of CO2 has been rising in the atmosphere, we've seen global greening, and no one talks about all the benefits that we have in terms of the impact that global greening has. Now, we only hear about the negatives of global warming. When it comes to CO2 in the atmosphere, you know, my view is, you know, the greenhouse gas effect is very well established. We know that, you know, to sort of increase CO2 in a space will lead it to it retaining more heat. The question is, you know, have we saturated that impact here on planet Earth? What is the impact it's having? What's the climate sensitivity, as climate scientists would describe it? You know, some climate scientists predict a very high climate sensitivity for CO2. That means it has a large temperature impact. You know, other scientists says it has a much smaller impact. But clearly, there are huge other factors influencing climate. You mentioned, Lembit, these what was the case in Greenland? Well, there's ice cores from Greenland, which are some of our best proxy data for what the past climate was like. And we see it was much warmer there in the past than it is now. And I think that should remind us that there's been these huge variations in the global climate history that could not possibly have anything to do with human emissions of CO2. And we still really don't understand those changes very well. So we should have some humility, I think, and be open to a wide range of things being important influences to the climate. That doesn't mean CO2 is all a hoax and we should just discount it. But it does mean that there are other important factors, and that the fact that they're not being researched as much as they should do is part of the climate hysteria that we're in, is that there's just all this focus, all this money on one particular element. And it's crowding out research, I think, in some of these other important areas of what regulates the Earth's temperature.
I'm looking, I won't go through the individual comments, but I'm looking at the feed, and some assume because you're called Net Zero Watch, you're trying to get to net zero carbon dioxide. That's not my impression. My impression is that you actually want a scientifically led debate on this, and that you have a lot of energy to promote the film, which we want to move. I want to move on to now. That was premiered in Central London, Climate the Movie. Mogden, you've sent me a very touching message. I'm going to finish this hour with that, so stay with it. Mogden sent me a very personal message, which I'm sure you won't mind me reading out because it's on the chat, just about my brother who passed away some time ago. But returning to this, Harry, tell us about the film, Climate the Movie. We'll talk about how it's been received, but tell us what that film is all about.
Well, that film is all about, you know, what's happened with climate change. How has it gone from a fringe issue maybe 20 or 30 years ago to one that's now dominating global politics and demanding all these things of all of us, that we change the way you know, we drive our car, change the way we heat our homes, change what we eat, whether we can go on holiday. This is a fundamental agenda that's being hoisted on us. And so this film looks partly at the history of that. You know, it looks at the scientific evidence for, you know, historical climate changes. It looks at other explanations for why the Earth's climate might be changing. All this interesting information from top global scientists. This is the key point. This isn't some crank in his attic coming up with some sort of theory. These are the world's top scientists at some of the world's top universities doing vital research that the public just haven't heard about, because all most of the media wants to talk about is climate change and how we all should be feeling so bad for ourselves because we're emitting all the CO2 and we're doomed. And this documentary shows the truth, which is we're not doomed. The world is thriving, and you know, emissions of CO2 from humans aren't going to lead to a global catastrophe, which many people are claiming. So those are really the key themes of the film, and I think it presents that all in a very powerful way. My colleague Benny Pizer at the Global Warming Policy Foundation is included as well. You know, looking at the political element, looking how fear is always at the heart of government efforts to restrict and control people's lives. And that's no different when it comes to climate change and all the political changes that have resulted from politicians amping up a scare to try and make all sorts of new interventions in the public's life.
You should be on their public relations team, Harry. I watched the film, and regular viewers know I'm very interested in this whole subject and have been for over 45 years now. And what I got from it was this. If you watch that film, you have only two options. You either call them liars, the people who made the film liars, or you have to accept that it is scientifically, physically impossible for human beings and the CO2 we generate to drive climate change. Because actually, according to that film, CO2 maybe has a small greenhouse effect, a beneficial one, actually. But it doesn't drive climate. It follows climate. And so therefore, we're faced with the option of either calling the people who made that film fraudsters or accepting that all the claims made about carbon dioxide are essentially nonsense. That would be my summary. I'm emphatic about this. As you know, I get angry when people blame CO2 when it's actually our friend. I know that you're Go on.
I don't see it in quite in the binary way. You know, I think CO2 has some impact. You know, I look at the experts that were in this film, you know, with all for their own expertise. I'm not a climate scientist myself. But of course, I look at all the other climate scientists who are claiming that there is, you know, at least an impact from CO2 that's potentially, you know, has a range. I think one important thing about mainstream climate science that people don't understand is that, you know, there's a range of predictions which are in the scientific mainstream for what impact a CO2 might have, you know, from quite low and insignificant to potentially a more significant change. So from about 1 degree to about 4 degrees. So, you know, that encompasses a big range. And I think, you know, there's potentially a role for CO2 to be playing, but clearly there is a much bigger picture. And there is an exaggeration of the climate problem to quite an extraordinary degree. So I think we need all the voices. The Global Warming Policy Foundation was originally set up by Nigel Lawson because he wanted to create a platform where we could debate this, where all the science could be put out for people to discuss, for people to debate, for the public conversation to be enhanced. We've never actually had a corporate view on the science of climate change, because we think, you know, science doesn't advance by people saying, you know, we're right, you're wrong, this is the story now, and you've got to accept it. That's what we see our opponents doing. You know, what we want to do is actually provide a platform where, you know, science advances by debate, by listening to all the different theories, and allowing all of that information to help us learn more and more about the climate in the future.
You're right to push back on this, because I should say to viewers that I am expressing an opinion, and my opinion is that carbon dioxide, as Harry says, is a climate greenhouse gas. Totally agree on that. I also believe that it doesn't create a tipping point, and it can't. I believe that a small increase in CO2 would actually be beneficial. And actually having a slightly warmer planet would be beneficial, because we're living in an ice age. Another point made in Climate the Movie. For most of the history of the Earth, my friends, there was no ice at all at either the North or the South Pole. And so we're in an exceptionally cold period at the moment, not a warm period. I don't want to go down that path too much, because I'm not really here to try to persuade viewers that I'm right. And I'm not trying to bully you into just agreeing with me, Harry. So let's move on to another aspect of the film. And that was an illustration that it's been much warmer in the past. And they showed data on that. Why is it that this, what looks like a fact from the historical record, is completely ignored, especially by the mainstream media, which says that we've had the hottest year on record, when we clearly haven't?
Well, the point about the historical climate record is really important, because it makes us, you know, aware of our own infallibility in understanding some of these past changes. And just going back to what you were saying about, you know, how cold was worse. You know, we are looking at what's a very cold period at the moment compared to past periods. And, you know, we were a bit colder before that, but we were more miserable. You know, human society has flourished as we've come out of that ice age and been in this warmer period. So, you know, that warmth, and even in the more sort of recent records where we have human history, We see that farming, we see that, you know, disease spreads when it's cold. We see those Roman warming periods, medieval warming periods were periods of relative prosperity, and that those cold periods, like the Little Ice Age, where we had frost fairs on the River Thames, were really hard periods of relative decline, of relative poverty. So that, you know, that really lends to what you were saying about warmth being positive. And I think we're only thinking that climate change can only have negative impacts. That's what you would believe if you just watched the BBC, for example, all the time. But any result of change, it's almost a very ultra-conservative kind of perspective that they seem to have, that the climate, you know, changes and it can only be bad. And you know, they keep insisting that it's only going to be bad, everything's going to get worse, and, you know, children are going to have a miserable future. That's so sad about this. There's some people even not having children because they think they're going to bring those children into a terrible world. That's tragic. And, you know, I think it's also reflective of a broader, you know, loss of confidence in our society, and that which will have very damaging consequences. So we've got to rediscover that confidence about the future, optimism about the future that's based on facts. You know, the world, take any objective metric about the world and living standards today compared to just 15 years ago, say, and, you know, find one that's actually got worse. It's going to be very difficult. So there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the future. And that's one of the most tragic things about, you know, climate change catastrophism, is that it's got all these people thinking in a very negative way, you know, just giving up. Oh, it's not worth, you know, fighting for the future anymore. And that's, you know, that's devastating in terms of the impact that has. We need confidence and optimism to help us, you know, be invested in improving society.
Two thoughts on that before we go to the break. One is, you are representative of an increasing number of people I've observed who are, what you might say, not convinced by the climate catastrophes, but you're unlikely to glue your hands to a motorway or start waving a fist, screaming or demanding that people are cancelled. And I think sometimes that means that those who aren't sure which side to believe in, sometimes they're persuaded by the sheer raw emotion of the other side, even though actually there isn't much space for emotion in science. The second thing I observe in what you're saying is this, as you say, fundamentalist belief that human beings are so powerful, we can stop climate change. I've been accused of being a climate change denier. I say, can we stop climate change? They say, yes. I say, then you're the climate change denier, because the climate has changed ever since the climate began. And then they're usually determined either to cancel me or they walk off. Both of those suggest to me that there's a mountain to climb when it comes to getting the science in here. Stay with us. You're watching The Lembotopic Show. I'm with Harry Wilkinson. We'll be to the top of the hour, at which point I'm going to read a very touching message from Mogden, which doesn't relate to this, but it deserves to be heard. And maybe others will be touched by it too. After the break, we're going to talk about whether there is a solution in the form of nuclear fusion. And if not, what should our energy and economic policy be in the years ahead? All of that with me, Lembotopic, here on TNT. See you in a minute.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor, creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to dav.org.
The next time you think you can illegally handle your mobile phone while driving and get away with it, think again. Phone detection cameras are in operation on New South Wales roads.
Hello.
So if you're driving and illegally handle your mobile phone, you can stop it or cop it.
This is the Limbit Opic Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Limbit Opic Show here on TNT, today's News Talk. I'm still with Harry Wilkinson. Coming up after the next break, incidentally, we've got Naeem Mahmood, who is a radical self-styled director. I went to see a premiere of his film. I do have a good life in many ways. Don't like going into London, but I like what I see when I get there. Went to a premiere last night. Anybody who was anyone in terms of the alternative, what would you call it, beat culture? Maybe that's not what it's called these days. Was there at the premiere, including a mayoral candidate. More of that later. With us now still from Net Zero Watch, an organization which is really trying to inject science to the debate about climate change, is Harry Wilkinson. I'm of the view, Harry, that I'm much more supportive of carbon dioxide than you are. I actually think we should have more of it in the atmosphere, not less, not least because I'm pretty sure we're about to go into a cooling phase. What would it take to I won't do it now, but out of interest, would you be convincible? Do you think it would be possible for me to convince you over time that CO2 should be increased? Or is that a bridge too far for you, Harry Wilkinson?
No, absolutely. You know, I think if there's more evidence that comes out, you know, about looking at the relative costs and benefits, I think one area of the scientific research that's been suppressed is, you know, the benefits of CO2 as well as disadvantages. You know, that's an incredibly complex thing to work out because you've got to look at the whole planet, all the impacts, you know, across a huge amount of space, what and in terms of social impacts, economic impacts. It's not an easy thing to be able to work out, but you know, certainly a lot more work needs to be done by scientists in terms of calculating the benefits as well as the disadvantages of more CO2 in the atmosphere, and then we can come to a, you know, a more informed conclusion. But I do think that this 1.5 temperature threshold is indicative of, you know, where the debate's gone wrong. We had this, rather than the science leading to policy, we had the big COP conference in Paris where it was debated and the small island nations insisted, you know, it wouldn't be 2 degrees, we'd try and limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. We're already hitting that for the last 12 months now, but the sky hasn't fallen in, we're all still here. You know, at what point will one of these silly targets be sort of just the point at which they say, okay, we predicted doom and gloom if we hit this point, and it didn't happen. So now, you know, can we all accept that and move on? You know, they never are satisfied with one doom and gloom target. They just come up with another one. And no one seems to remember the fact that, you know, the sky didn't fall in when we reached the latest milestone. We heard Prince Charles saying, oh, we have 6 months to save the planet. Boris Johnson, you know, a minute to midnight on the doomsday clock when we had COP26 in Glasgow. You know, none of these things have come to pass. And yet, you know, still they churn out more catastrophist predictions.
A couple of thoughts there. One is that I saw somebody who I was so incensed by, I actually wrote to her employers, which was, I think something Antarctic Survey, British Antarctic Survey, who said, the good news is we've now, because of all the things we've done, we've stopped the temperature increase from being 4 Celsius by the end of the century. It'll just be closer to 1. Okay, so she now has a crystal ball and she can tell what temperature it's going to be in 76 years. I don't think so. So they're now beginning to say, if it doesn't happen, oh, well, that's because of all the things we've done. Even though, of course, we created more human-generated CO2 last year than in the history of the Earth. And the second point here, in my view, is, as you say, we hit this huge fanfare in the old state-sponsored, taxpayer-sponsored British media saying 1.5 Celsius, degrees Celsius, has been breached. I looked out the window and I went, well, where is it then? Where's the Armageddon? Or maybe we have to wait a while before the Armageddon comes, in which case it's not a tipping point. It either is a tipping point or it's not. I know it's not, of course, because the climate's been much warmer than this and has been much warmer than this for most of the history of the Earth, actually. But I'm going on to a rant now. A few other comments coming in, by the way. One has been, Seb says, I've just been convinced not to bother watching that movie. All right, Seb, live in your echo chamber. Why don't you watch the movie and then tell us which part of it is wrong? Otherwise, you're one of those people I criticize for only seeing one side. I read the catastrophist stuff, perhaps because there'll be something in it that'll change my view. I say it again here on TNT, Today's News Talk Live. If someone comes up with more persuasive arguments, database that shows that we are at a tipping point or that we are wrecking the climate, I will come here onto my own show and I will say I was wrong. So that's my offer. Give me the data. I'm data-based, not emotion-based when it comes to the subject. A couple more. A lot of people saying that climate changes every hour, Madrid says. Yes, that's right. And little Carol says the weather changes all the time. And that's the point. Climate and weather are slightly different. Climate's the long-term trend. Weather can change from day to day or even hour to hour. I was once in Estonia and we went out in the morning. I was in a parliamentary delegation as an MP. It was plus 18 Celsius. We went in for lunch. When we came out, it had gone in 2 hours from plus 18 to minus two. That happens quite a lot in that latitude. Harry, let's get back to solutions. My personal view is that there isn't a climate emergency, but it's still wise to be prudent with limited resources. Where do you stand on what many people think will be the great panacea, the great solution, which is nuclear fusion?
Well, you know, as human society has advanced, we've gone to more and more dense energy sources. You know, we started with energy-dense fuels. So we started with wood. You know, that generated a certain amount of heat and light, you know, relatively effectively, certainly from, you know, what limited alternatives people had. But then we had coal. You know, the Industrial Revolution was founded off coal. Since then, we've had gas-fired power stations and, of course, nuclear fission power stations as well, which generate an enormous amount of energy from just tiny amounts of uranium, quite extraordinary. And so, you know, progress moves with energy density. And as we get access to those more energy dense fuels, we've been able to create all of this industrial progress as a result. And this was a point made in an excellent film by my colleagues at Net Zero Watch, which is now out that you should check out on YouTube. But you know, the point with fusion is, you know, it's more dense at an atomical level in terms of the energy it achieves with the output. But when we look at the actual equipment that you have to build nuclear fusion reactors with, it doesn't really compare very well to nuclear fission that we can already do very well. So I think the best case scenario for nuclear fusion, and we held a webinar about this with three nuclear fusion experts recently, and you know, it was their view that, you know, even the best nuclear fusion reactors in say 50 years time would be nowhere close to what we can already achieve with conventional nuclear power stations. So, you know, scientific research is a great thing. We're pushing the boundaries of knowledge. That's a good thing in itself. But, you know, let's put most of our resources in the technologies that are going to work best. And clearly, you know, conventional nuclear has a lot more to offer at the moment than nuclear fusion, unfortunately. So I don't think fusion is going to be the panacea that many people are talking about.
A couple of thoughts here. First of all, D.D. Allen in Wellingborough. I love Wellingborough, actually. It's a very lovely place. I used to have a pilot's license, and well, I still do. And I used to land around there, lovely little airfields. D.D. says, tuned in for the first time today. I found all guests very interesting so far. Thank you. So the pressure's on, Harry. don't mess it up in the last 5 minutes. I'll try not to. Sandy Girl's asking, can you ask Carrie Wilkinson where the funding comes from for Net Zero Watch? Who sponsors you? Big Oil?
No, I mean, I didn't think BP or Shell, you know, would ever fund us because it would be such bad PR for them. And people would say they were funding climate change denial. So there's no way these oil companies are going to fund us anyway. However, you know, there's a good reason we don't give out the individual names. We're funded by private individuals who choose to support us because we're supporting a cause that they believe in. But, you know, we see all these protests. We see a lot of aggression thrown our way. We have paint thrown at our building. You know, people call us, you know, climate change deniers. They try and cancel us. You know, it's understandable that we don't want to, you know, impose that intolerance on other people. People want to be able to support us without necessarily having their careers ruined, without, you know, being, without activists showing up at their doorstep, you know, throwing paint at them. So unfortunately, we are in this intolerant environment. You know, we would love to be able to say exactly, you know, who our donors were. But we're not in an environment now where there is the tolerance, where people can support the causes they believe in without facing harassment. You know, you see certain left-wing, centre-left think tanks that publish full lists of their donors. But, you know, there aren't right-wing people generally in this country who are protesting at the funders of left-wing think tanks, but there's a lot of stuff that seems to be happening the other way around.
Okay, so I understand why you say that. I asked a question because I was asked it as well. Just to point, Red says, dangerous nuclear waste. Why don't we just burn coal? I tend to agree that we should just be burning coal, to be honest with you. Fusion is the one that makes a really big bomb, and which right powers the sun. Fission isn't quite so lively, but they both create waste. We're running out of time, but I just want to ask you, if you were to summarize what should be, one thing, sorry, the Seb says, how can Lemit be database? Yet believe we landed on the moon. Seb, I believe we landed on the moon. I'm not going to have that debate again today. At some point, I'm going to get someone on who then you can simply say made the whole thing up. All right, not doing that today, though. If you were to summarize where you think the debates should go next, Harry, where should the debate about the climate, this alleged climate emergency go next?
Well, I think the next and crucial step for the debate is an acknowledgement that, you know, we're not dealing with a catastrophic situation. We're not dealing with an existential crisis, because when people are talking in this extreme ways, they can't have rational problems to a solution, because if the problem is existential, then you'll do almost anything. You'll endure any kind of hardship to try and stop this outcome. Once people accept that there are costs and benefits to warming, you know, there's costs and benefits to any particular policy route that we might follow, you know, that's where we start having a more sensible discussion about climate change and what, if anything, we should do about it. So I hope that recognition will come with time. You know, as we see more warming, if we do see more warming and the sky doesn't fall in, then that might eventually prompt a change. But I think, you know, a lot of the political impetus for change is coming from how the policies are impacting on people's lives. You know, people are struggling in many cases, and they're being asked to pay more for their gas boilers, more for their electricity. You know, they're potentially not going to be able to afford to drive anymore, because politicians have said you can only drive electric cars in the future. You know, as these policies bite, you know, people will say, why are they doing this to us? And they'll really look into the underlying explanations that they've been given and begin to criticize them. I think that's happening now. You know, the process is happening quickly, and it certainly can't come quickly enough.
Thank you so much, Harry. I'll certainly come around with my charts and try to persuade you that CO2 is definitely our friend. I understand that you're slightly constrained because you need to check with others on this, but I really appreciate it. And what's where can people see this film, the climate change in the movie?
It's going to be out on YouTube from March the 31st, I believe, so very soon. And there's going to be premieres in the Netherlands and Washington as well. So it's going to be getting a global audience. And I certainly hope that everyone who's able to watch this can watch it, share it, you know, and provoke a discussion amongst their friends, whatever their friends' views are. You know, people need to be talking about this. People need to be debating it.
Thank you. That's Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch. Interesting. Welcome your views as well. I'm a bit out of time for Mogdan's comment. I'll start on that in the next hour. Coming up next, we've got Naeem Mahmood, who is a tremendous director, self-styled, and made a great film with no budget. All of that with me, Lemba Topic, in the next hour right here on Today's News Talk. Don't go anywhere. See you in a few minutes.